Hello, Danish people. I'm Steve, and I'm an alcoholic.
I'm Steve.
I'm concerned about that introduction, because I don't know what the heck he said. He could say, this is Steve. He's on the run from the Federal Bureau of Investigation from the United States. He's here hiding out in Copenhagen. He'll be back. I don't know. Yeah, so it's always gets. I always get, when they do that, too, I always never know what they're saying. They're probably telling their story, so, because mine's boring. Well, I've been in Denmark about a day and a half, so I think I can tell you all about it, because I'm an alcoholic, right? On the 21st question on the 20 questions is, do you need to have facts in order to have an opinion? If the answer is no, you're an alcoholic, right? Because I could ask any of you, come up here and give a 45-minute lecture on the Russian economy. You know nothing about it. You could do it right now, right? Because you're alcoholics, because you had to learn how to tell stories, like where you'd been since October. And it was May, you know? You know, in October in the States, of course, we have Halloween, and alcoholics wake up in their Halloween costume in January. So they have to kind of explain why they've got that nun in the front and hooker on the back little outfit still on. But that's just in L.A. My sobriety date's May 25th, 1979, and I have not found it necessary to take a drink since that time. I'm sort of an atypical member of AA. I haven't had a relapse. I don't think that's normal. Most of the people I know have. It's good if you don't. You don't have to. I'm so worried about that table in the back. I just know halfway through my talk, it's just going to fall. You guys break so many. You know, I got to tell you, you'll notice I digress. But I feel like such a wimp. You understand the word wimp? Okay, because I'm just, okay. Wimp being here, especially the bicycles. I got to talk about the bicycles for a minute. You don't wear helmets. Everybody in the States wears a helmet. All the kids wear, and now and there's nobody on the streets wear. And then you got your kids in the front in a cardboard box in front of, they'd have you arrested in the States for that. And then, oh my God, where are these, those women dressed like they're going to the opera riding a bike? And I'm sorry to say, appropriately. You know, they're looking good doing it. I think there's like this blonde factory of just, I mean, I know you guys are doing this because that's all I've been doing all day is watching the bikes. Watching the bikes. Watching the bikes go by. Oh, a brunette. Okay, one. All right, redhead. At the redheads, I want to yell, they stole you from Ireland! Because they're lucky you don't have to make up for the resentments from your ancestors. I tell you, it's just an amazing thing. And the bikes are so tall. And then I realize, and I'm thinking, okay, do they look better coming towards you or going away from you? I'm spending too much time alone. It's really good to be at the meeting. This is what happens when you're alone. In my head, he talks to you. Hello, hi there. Does he talk to you? Hello there, how are you? We'll be having a day today, probably a crappy one, so you should just stay in bed. If you're new, he talks to you a little differently than he talks to me. To me, he says, all right, you got 28 years, you could have one drink, you'd have just one drink. You were very young when you got, very, 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 very young. You were 11. Everything he says is true. You could have just one drink, just one drink. How about a non-alcoholic beer? What's that? What's a Zima? What's a Moosey? What's Stoli Vanilla like? You know? Now, I know if he ever talked me into taking that one drink, the minute it hit my stomach, boom, he'd be right there going, you rotten, stinking loser, you. You just threw away 28 years. Why don't you drink your miserable self to death? Because that's the way he talks. So now if you're new, he talks to you a little differently. He goes, okay, you got 90 days. Is 90 days a big deal here? 98 chip? You get a 90-day chip here? Okay, 90 days. You got 90 days. Now this is alcoholic logic. Listen, 90 days. You got 90 days. You better drink soon or you're going to have so much time, you can never drink again. Right? You get the... Now, see, because real logic, real people, other Danish people logic is not drinking, life better. If I continue not to drink, life should probably get a little better or continue the way it is. That's not alcoholic reasoning. Not drinking, life better, drink. Right? Or he's saying, all right, I know what. Let's drink tonight and we'll get sober tomorrow. Somebody back there said it with me, right? Because his voice is in your head. Because he always wants to get sober tomorrow. Today is just not a good day to get sober. I'm hungover. It's Monday. It's Tuesday. It's dark. It's cloudy. She left me. She stayed. I got to mow the grass. I don't have to mow. Whatever. You know, I had this shrink who was trying to help me get sober. And he went, why do you drink? Everything, you know, I never, if I was in a rehab and my relapse prevention program would be like 5 minutes, what makes you relapse? Everything. I can drink over anything. What? Work. I was stressed at work. That's why I drank. Yeah. Or I don't have a job. The relationship, it's too much. I can't handle that. I don't know if she's the right girl. I don't have a girl. The kids, no kids. You guys are having a lot of kids here, too. Besides bikes and girls, I've been counting kids. There are a lot. I don't know if there's a population thing here, but you're trying to make up for time, or maybe it's just the winners. I don't know. So this guy is always trying to get me to drink. And the reason he's trying to get me to drink is I'm an alcoholic. And I didn't understand that until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I said I'm atypical because, A, I loved Alcoholics Anonymous from the minute I got here. This is the greatest show on earth for whatever it is you put in the basket. You know, I mean, where else can you see one old-timer getting a fist fight with another old-timer over gratitude? You know what I'm saying? Date in your first year. Don't date in your first year. Now, that's always a big controversy. Because the men sponsors are going, you can date in your first year, but don't get serious. See, that's where all the... You can't have a relationship. That's where the conflict comes. So I loved AA from the minute I got here. I mean, it was just crazy. And all the guys that I got sober with were World War II vets with third grade educations. And I was a nice college educated kid. And one of them, I don't remember, he was about this big. He stuck his finger in my chest and he said, Steve, if it's your mother's fault, you're drinking, why ain't you waking up sick? And I couldn't answer him. I'm still, 28 years later, trying to find an answer, because if I ever can, I'm going to dig him up and tell him why it's her fault. Because if I could blame it on somebody else, I would. The other thing that I came to Alcoholics Anonymous with, which I have in common, I believe, with all the people we read about in the book, I desperately wanted to stop drinking. And that's okay if you're here tonight and you don't. In fact, I think a lot of people come to AA because somebody sends them here, or because if you have a drinking problem, you're supposed to go to AA. Whatever reason, whatever gets you here, if you come here for whatever, the coffee, because it's free. And I've had 3 cups, so I've had caffeine, and I freebased 2 cigarettes before we started the meeting. I'm just ready to go. Probably a few drug addicts in here, too. I'm not a drug addict. I just never could be one. I couldn't wait. Drug dealers make you wait. They do. They're like rock bands. They make you wait. You know, they just can't start on time. I don't care what time it's supposed to be. Concert starts at 8 o'clock. It's going to be 8:30 before they get there. And that's the way, that must be in the drug dealer union thing. And I always knew when the liquor store was going to be open. Now, I've done a few drugs. But I am to drugs what a heavy drinker is to alcohol. It says in our book, we have a very radical definition of alcoholism in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It says that there is a heavy drinker who in many respects looks like an alcoholic, who may even die a few years earlier from his drinking. He is not an alcoholic. Say what? I don't know. Let's just all get up, go down to the hospital, take one of you, say, hey, this is our friend Joe. He's drinking a lot. We think he's going to die a few years early from his drinking. What do you think he is, doctor? And the doctor's going to go, he's an alcoholic. No, not Alcoholics Anonymous. Dying from drinking is not good enough in AA to make you an alcoholic. It just makes you a wussy drinker. No. This, and I can't remember who said it, but this is what makes you an alcoholic, in my opinion, in Alcoholics Anonymous. And all of this is my opinion, of course. It comes out of the book. It is right. It is correct. But it is only my opinion. Look, it's what I've based my sobriety on, some of it for a very long time, some of it since 2 hours ago. It's liable to change. Some of it has never changed. I was very lucky. I got into a group. It got me into the book. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I never, ever wanted to do anything the normal way. Can you relate to that, anybody here? Never wanted to do it the regular way. No, not the, excuse the profanity, average way. The average way was for those average, dull, lame people. Not creative, autumn tone people like myself. When I was 8 years old, my father was in the Army. We were stationed in Alaska. They told me something wet stuck on metal in cold weather. It was 30 below. I took below zero. I put my tongue on the monkey bars. Who knows? They could have been lying. I only did it once. I've talked to people who have done it more than that, you know? So something happened besides the desire to stop drinking, which is where I sort of started this. I wanted to do it the average way in AA for the first time in my life. I wanted to do the steps. I wanted to do the steps, the fourth step, the way it was out of the book, the way everybody I knew had stayed sober. I just wanted to do it that way. I wanted to do it the way the people said that worked. And then I got to be creative in the rest of my life. And I have to tell you, I found that to be true. That if I will take the program that those drunk, ruined, bankrupt crooks that founded this program, they were crooks, they sold bogus stock in the book, if you know our history. I mean, these guys were not saints. That's what I love about them. They called us pigeons. A newcomer was a pigeon. You know what a pigeon is? Pigeon is somebody, a salesman is selling to set up something, sell something that ain't very good. It's a pigeon. So I wanted to do it that way. And so I came into Alcoholics Anonymous with a great desire to stop drinking. And if I don't say anything else tonight, I some of you are very lucky or unlucky. You've been able to go 30 days, 6 months, a year, some amount of time without drinking. I never got one day, once I started drinking alcoholically, and the time I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. So my great blessing was that first day I got was the first day I'd ever gotten. And I couldn't deny that. I couldn't deny something's happened here. I went and hung out with these really strange people and heard some really strange stuff about God and some steps and not drinking and one day at a time and call me. Yeah, I'd call you, right? Call her, but not you. No, no, really, I was very fortunate. When I got sober, everybody was older. You couldn't do that 13-step thing, you know? And if you're here on the 13th step, God bless you, whatever. I tell the guys I sponsor that are new, I say, get right into a relationship. It will help you with your step work. It's 9 o'clock. She didn't call. Where is she? You told her not to call you today. Oh, yeah. Click. It's 10 o'clock. She didn't call. You know, it's just amazing, you know. Does she like me? Do I like her? Do I like her more than she likes me? I mean, and these are the calls you get at 4 o'clock in the morning, and they've been thinking about it since 9, you know. But they couldn't call you at 9. They have to wait till 4 o'clock. So I walked in there, and see, what I didn't understand was this, is it, and as I was saying, that there's a certain kind of alcoholic who will die. There's a certain kind of heavy drinker who will die early. But given certain circumstances, life, whatever, they will alter or quit or modify their drinking. They are not an alcoholic. What makes me an alcoholic is everything in my life is right there. Every good, loving, kind thing I have in my life. Everything that makes life worth living. Forget the stuff. Although the stuff was important. Stuff's still important. But you know, if you hang around here for a while, it starts to be about the inside stuff. You are beautiful. You are God's snowflake. God loves you. You know, all the stuff your sponsor tells you when you hate your own guts. Sounds like your mother. And if you take so much as one drink, you're going to lose it all. And you cannot not drink. That's what makes me an alcoholic. Yes, I have the physical allergy to the drug ethyl alcohol that when I drink it, I want more. And when I realize when I say that in a room full of alcoholics, that when I drink ethyl alcohol, I want more, I get flatline, right? Boop! Because in your head, you're going, well, of course you want more. That's why there is more. If there isn't any more, we'll go get more. Because once you drink, you want more. I mean, this is what a normal drinker does. I don't want any more. For those of you on tape, the very tall, blonde speaker. Put that on XA. All right. But this is what a non... That's right. I love to play with people on tape, listening to it. You're in the car. Stop that. Okay. Watch the road. All right. All right. So here's what a non-alcoholic does. They go, I don't want any more. And then watch this. This is the magic part. This is what they do. They walk away. And they leave... We were talking about this earlier. That's alcohol abuse. Watch these idiots when they go to dinner. There's four of them. They order one bottle of wine. And I've been watching them. They've not been hitting the bar going to the bathroom. No, 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 no. That's all the booze they've had all night. So they each get a bottle of wine, if I remember correctly, and I do, is 4 6-ounce glasses of wine with a little bit left over. Am I right? Anybody that's a server? Yeah, right. That's about right, right? Okay, so they're sitting there for hours. With that one glass of wine. Why do I know this? Because I'm over in the corner with my Diet Coke monitoring them. I'm a retired professional, but I can watch. And then they go, oh, time for the movies. And they get up and they leave it. And you don't know these people, but you really have to fight going over to them and going, wait, excuse me, excuse me, excuse me. You didn't notice there's wine left in your glass. But you just finish that, and then you can leave the restaurant. You know? Okay. Want to finish that for me? Okay, I'm right here. I'm in charge. Okay, there you go. Just finish it. And they go, no, I'm done. They're doing the thing. They're walking away. I'm done. The walking away thing. And they go, look, come on, look. I'll tell you what. Just finish the drink, and there won't be any trouble, okay? Because you're not leaving wine on the table. That's not going to happen. They go, well, what should I do? Well, just chug the thing. Just do that and chug it. And then they say something stupid like, well, if I did that, I'd get sick. And you already drank. That is a normal relationship to the drug ethyl alcohol. When you've had enough, you're done. See, I said that word. You don't know what it means. Enough. You're going home tonight. Is there an English translation I missed? Enough. What is enough? No. Because see, when I take 6, 8, 12 ounces of ethyl alcohol, and it hits my stomach, the sun rises. It goes down my legs, up my chest, flushes my face. Careful, boys. Hold on, we're not there yet. All right. Hold on. Don't go before me, all right? It comes out my hands and fingers, and my whole body goes, ah. Now, if your sphincter got a little tighter, or there's a little bit, sphincter doesn't translate, I see. Or there's a little sweat on your lip. Or he's talking to you now. Hello. You understand the kind of alcoholism that I have. Because for me, alcohol fixes everything when it's working. I understand it if you want to drink tonight. It's been 28 years since I've had any ethyl alcohol, and I understand what it will do. In fact, I had a guy I sponsored, one of the scariest things I've ever heard in sobriety. I sponsored him. He had about 13 years when he went out. He went out on coke, crack. Another drug I don't understand. There may be a few crackheads here. I don't understand it. It's a strange addiction. Apparently, you can't do it in your own home. You have to rent a motel room or a hotel room that has porn on it and get a hooker that you can't do anything with. And you can't buy all the coke and crack at once. You have to buy it like at $40 increments. And so you're constantly, too much trouble. Give me a big bottle of booze. Settle in. Me and Ethel. Ethyl alcohol. Ah. See, and they explain that to me. They explain to me that one of my problems was I had a physical allergy to the drug ethyl alcohol, that if I drank it, I wanted more, that I craved more. They explained that to me. I'm going, all right, great, I just won't drink. And they said, but you can't do that, huh? Said, see, you can't not drink. That's your real problem. Because if it was just the fact that you had an allergy, I mean, there's no such thing as Strawberries Anonymous, right? Right? People who eat strawberries and bust out in hives? We don't have meetings for that, do we? There's nobody standing up in front of, what are we at, 50, 60, 100 people in here going, yep, it's been 28 years since my last strawberry. Yeah, I haven't had a damn desire to go out and eat a strawberry and break out in hives in 28 years. It's a miracle of God, the steps of my sponsor. I just want to thank you people for every good, loving, kind thing in my life. That happened, does it? Physical allergy to strawberries. They just don't do them. I'm allergic. How about crab? Allergic to that too. Don't do it. Peanuts? Make me swell right up. Don't eat peanuts. Alcohol? Oh, I'll drink that. Lose everything I've got. A little drink, you cost me my wife, my kid, my job, my car, my self-respect, every good, loving, kind thing I ever had in my life. I'll give you one more chance. Now, some of you have that same problem with other things, you know, and God bless you. I didn't. Anything that got in the way of ethyl alcohol went. You know, I got tired of doing this, so I stopped LSD. I stopped smoking. Oh, come please. And, you know, I love to do, you know, amphetamines and go to those bars so I could drink more. But when my hand looked like Gene Wilder in Blazing Saddles, I switched to downs, you know. Anything that would allow me to keep drinking. And then I walk in here and you people tell me I can't not drink. And then if I do drink, I'm going to have this craving to drink more, which will ultimately kill me. Have a nice day, because that's the first step. Powerless over alcohol, and my life is unmanageable. Now, when I talk about the steps, I usually talk about them and not in an hour pitch, but in three ways. One, the first time I went through them. The second way is the way they've sort of manifest themselves in my sobriety throughout my sobriety, and hopefully I will share with you the way they are today. Because the way they are today is not the way they were 5 years ago. That's why I keep coming to meetings. That's why I still have a sponsor. That's why I still make calls. I don't know how to do tomorrow. I don't have the same problem. They didn't tell me you're going to get old. You know? They didn't tell me that I could get 28 years of sobriety, but I was going to get 28 years older. I don't know what I thought was going to happen. I didn't think at all. I just thought about not drinking that day. I never dreamed about having 28 years. I never dreamed about having 28 years and speaking in Denmark. None of that ever occurred to me. I just didn't want to die drunk. And I wanted, you know, see, this is the problem. When you make love to a gorilla, you're not done till the gorilla's done. And that was the problem when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. Some of you have never thought about quitting. I've met people with lots of times, 20 years, walked into a meeting for some reason, I have no idea why, said I had never in my life thought about quitting drinking, walked into a meeting, haven't had a drink since. I've met those people. I know they exist. I know some of you have come to a meeting with no intention of quitting drinking. Because we all came to our meeting because there was a little heat on, right? Nobody just walks in here to be spiritual, you know. There's a little heat on at home. There's a little heat on at work. There's a little heat on from the heat. There's a little heat on. There's a little heat on somewhere. There was a little heat on for me, you know, my soon-to-be ex-wife. And I absolutely have no idea how I did my first year of sobriety. If I look back on my first year of sobriety today, I say I couldn't do it sober. My ex-wife, I wasn't a violent drunk. I was a put a lampshade crazy ha-ha drunk. You know, the kind you really like to take out in public. The kind that when they're drunk has never met anybody they didn't like. And thinks everybody else is drunk too. So she just, the book says it, that the alcoholic is sort of more or less always insanely drunk. That was me. Now, I could get a little snarly, but for the most part, she just left because it was crazy. But the good non-Al-Anon co-alcoholic that she was, when she left, she just moved across the street. That's what we call in the United States from the co-alcoholic to the alcoholic, because every day I had to come out and look at my shoes to get to my car to make sure I didn't see what guy's car was parked in her driveway, because she made sure it was parked where I could see it. I don't know how I did that. She lived there across the street from me for the first 6 months of my sobriety. And of course, I didn't want her till she left, and then I wanted her, right? Because an alcoholic's always wanting out till he's out, then he wants in. I mean, you know, when we exit, we're not going nowhere. They don't know that. We won't ever tell the non-alcoholic that. But we go, I'm leaving! Of course, they throw themselves, no, you can't leave, until they go to an Al-Anon meeting. But if... Your stuff's packed. Bye-bye. All right. But had they not known that, had they just let us go, we would be outside the door. I made my exits. She's supposed to stop me. Cut. What do we do now? She's not stopping me. So I have no idea. And see, and what's so strange is, because I honestly believe, and this is my belief, that the reason I don't drink today is I have had a spiritual experience brought about by the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the God of my understanding, that have expelled the obsession to drink. And that for this alcoholic, anything else, I would still be drinking. I don't know about you. I know people who are sober a long time that say they've never had that, and that's okay with me. Anybody who comes here with a problem with ethyl alcohol and gets help, God bless you, I'm glad you're here. But if you're an alcoholic like me, and if it's 1 to 10, I'm a 10, I've got the worst form of this disease that is possible to have. I was the very first person in my family to get sober. My grandfather died of this disease. My grandmother and my grandfather had four daughters. 50% of them died of this disease. I'm adopted. I've had two mothers, two fathers. 50% of my parents have died of this disease. I was the very first one to get sober. And my aunt, who passed away at 82 a couple of years ago with 16 years of sobriety, was the very first person in her generation to die of natural causes, if you don't consider smoking, die of natural causes, primarily because of the light that Alcoholics Anonymous brought into her life, because of me carrying the message to my cousin who carried the message to her. So, but that didn't happen at first. All I know is I started going to meetings, no steps, no sponsor, didn't know what the hell you were talking about, no nothing, and I'm not drinking. And I'm like this big proponent, steps, sponsor, work, but there's this other thing that happens before. And I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just grace. But I don't know what the difference was between me sitting in that meeting, my very first meeting was May, and I don't want to give any wrong impressions. My very first meeting was May 1st, 1979. My sobriety date's May 25th, 1979. The reason I didn't get sober on May 1st, 1979 was I had another plan. You probably have a plan too. I've never met a newcomer without a plan. I don't know about your plan, but my plan has no recoveries. There are zero people sober on the Steve Bordner plan. Maybe about 2 million people sober on the AA plan, whatever you think that is. My plan was this, and it was a good one. He told me it was a good one. This is a good plan. I was going to drink Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and I was going to give you Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. I was only going to take 3 and give you 4. I thought that was incredibly generous of me. But you see, we call it surrender. And when you're surrendering, you don't go, I will give you 3. Oh, you've got the big gun in my head. Okay, I'll give you 2. All right, you do whatever you want. You got the big gun in my head. All right, just take me, you know. Well, so for about 3 weeks, I tried that plan, and of course, the Sunday drinking turned into Monday to Tuesday, the hangout, and when I was, at the end, I was so sick, I drank 2 or 3 days just to get well enough to get drunk again. You know, I found the morning drink, throw up 2 to hold down 1, you know, the whole deal, you know the deal, you know the deal, you know what it's like. So I don't know, I just said, okay, whatever you say. You know, you ever notice that with alcoholics? If I told you had like stomach cancer, but if you went out here on the street and stood on your head naked for 2 hours a day, you'd live, boom, you'd be out there. Yes, whatever, I don't want to die. You tell them, you got alcoholism, it kills almost everybody that gets it. You got to go to meetings. I don't know. Might want to do it a sponsor to call and talk to for free. Now you're asking a little much. Get to know people. I don't know. And then there's some steps you might want to do. I'm out of here. So all I know is I was willing to listen to those sergeant majors with seventh grade educations tell me what to do. And one of the greatest gifts I have been given besides sobriety is sponsoring guys. Guys are the greatest thing that women, I'm so sorry you don't get to sponsor them. Some of you might eventually. I have sponsored women occasionally. If never heard of Fifth Step, don't plan to. Always said, listen, you get to the Fifth Step, go tell somebody else. I'm not listening to that. I'm not that spiritual. I'm afraid I might not react to your sexual inventory the right way, all right? So, being honest. So, but guys are great because they're so simple. I mean, if you're here and you're new and one of your goals is to be a guru in AA, it ean't hard. This is not the Mensa Society. You just can say the simplest stuff and they will just think you are great. I mean, it's like she says she cheated with my best friend and she doesn't want me to go. She doesn't like me anymore. What should I do? Don't go out with her anymore. Wow. He's so zen. Because, see, I would never have thought that. What, she doesn't like me? She's cheating on me? Of course I got to keep dating her. You mean I can break up with her? I have that? Guys call me up and go, how can I make the fight with my wife go better? And I have to really literally say stuff like, well, I think if you don't start the fight, look, bitch, it will go better. And they look at me and they go, yeah, sure? If I didn't say that, what would I say? Well, how about honey, darling, sweetheart, something like that. And don't talk about her family. That doesn't go well either. You're just like your father. Don't say that. I mean, I've learned all that stuff here. I don't know. Do you guys tailgate here? Tailgating? Does that translate? Tailgating? Where you get really close to the car in front of you because they're not going fast enough? Because you think, huh?
It's bikes.
Bikes. Oh, you tailgate the bikes. Oh, that's real sweet. Good. 2,000 pounds of steel and 35 pounds of bike. Oh, yeah. I got to go now. All right. And the bikes with the kids in them, right? Okay, good. Without the helmets. But I had to learn that you could just back off and let them go. Or if they were tailgating you, you could get over and let them pass you. I learned if somebody didn't like you, you didn't have to have an opinion about it. That actually, if you're going to be in a, look, if you're in a home group, don't change your home group because of a resentment. Because if you change your home group and go to another group because of a resentment, they'll just follow you. Now, it won't be the same people. They'll have different names and different little earth suits, but it's going to be the same resentment because I found out that if I have my whole lesson, I can't say that. One of the lessons that I've had to learn in 28 years of Alcoholics Anonymous is how to get along with you. People, places, and things. All right, places, I'm in this great place. I don't know what that park's about. It's a little dingy. I think they were taking LSD when they made that park. But it's a little wacky in there, especially at night, but okay. And there's some spires in this town and some architecture. I'm not sure. I think somebody was doing something. But places, don't like the place? I'll be back in New York soon. Things. Buy things, lose things, get things, everything. All of that takes care of itself. It's the people. I'm sure if I stayed here long enough, I would find with you the same things that make me mad with them back there, that made me mad with them back there, 'cause people tick me off. Not this group, of course. Them. Many of them need to die. The world would be a better place if they were out of the pool that is going to reproduce. They'd have no business reproducing. I don't know if they do it here. Actually, you don't have them. In the States, we have this little, if you want to cross, you push a button. Now, any of you that know anything about electricity, well, you do this with an elevator. Once you push the button, the circuit is set. No matter how many times you push the button, that elevator is not going to come any faster. And yet, what do? They keep doing this. I want to kill them. I don't know why. I'm sitting there. I've been having a great day. I've been in Copenhagen. I've been looking around. Some little old lady from Iowa in my hotel is doing this, and I just need to take her out in the back alley. And the body will be found, you know. 28 years, yeah. You think you're going to get well, huh? Maybe they get a well speaker next time, not this one. Airplanes. I had to ride an airplane here, all right? Airplanes. Oh, my God. All right. Look, here's what happens in an airplane. The ticket says 37A. Your seat, you who are in front of me, is 37A, all right? So you get on the airplane, you stop at the first row. Now, I am a big humanitarian. I'm going to give you that one. Maybe the architect designed the plane that the first row is 37A. Maybe that is the truth. Maybe that happened. But you know what? Oh, no, it didn't. It's number one. What a surprise. The first row is number one, not 37A. Okay, so that's one. That means let's move it a while, all right? No, no, not you. You go from one to the next row thinking it's one, 37A. I need to kill you before we take off. Just think if somebody gave me something really to be irritated about. Because, listen, in my sobriety, it's two things. The ducks of trivia pecking at your ankles. Brushing your teeth three times a day. Going to work. The boss liking you. The boss expecting you to be there because you usually are there. The boss expecting you to do a good job. The wife expecting you to actually pick up what she told you to pick up at the grocery store and be home sometime close to when you said you. All of this stuff is new. I never did any. It's a lot of pressure. That's a whole lot more pressure than they explain why I'm drunk. You know? So this sobriety thing. So it's the people. And I will tell you, I said that I like to talk about the steps, because now I'm really on the third step. You know, powerless over alcohol, my life was unmanageable. Came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. For me, that was the alcoholic group. It was the group, if that's your higher power at the beginning, those people were sober and I wasn't. Man, I could not argue with that. That is just 1 and 1 equals 2. You know what I mean? That was real simple. They were sober. Some of them were sober a year. Some were sober 5 years. Some were sober 30 years. And the ones who really impressed me and the ones who are going to impress you tonight, if you've got one day, is a guy that had 30 days. 30 days. How do you get 30 days? Oh, my God, tell me how you got 30 days. That was my hero. Heck with the old-timers. I didn't know. They were talking quantum physics. They would get in those tradition meetings, and I think Bill's a rat, but I'm in Akron, New York. The good of AA depends on we're all going to get drunk. The group's going to go to hell in a handbag, blah, 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 blah. How'd you get 30 days? You know? Because we do, boy. We, you know, you get some time, and they are the traditions. I can give you a tradition talk. I can tell you what's threatening AA today. The threat to AA today, as Steve Bordner sees it. Oh, I mean, how do you get 30 days? How do you get Well, we got to get one day first, Steve. Okay, one day. All right. And that 30 days happened. And then I got that coin. And where I got the coin, it was a metal coin. All the rest of them were plastic. That 30-day was a metal coin. And they told you that if you took that coin, you had to agree to a couple of things. One is you had to agree to break the chip before you take a drink if you didn't call somebody. And they suggested one of three ways of breaking it. Put it on your head and hit it with a hammer. Or put it one of two places and let it dissolve until you take a drink. Right? I went, okay. I believe that. See, I was stupid enough to believe anything. I was believing people who were drinking. I found out later, some guy told me something, saved my life. Oh, he'd been drunk the whole time. It didn't matter. See? It didn't matter. Because it was still the truth. I ran into a guy one time. I was, the first 2 years I was sober, I was staying with my drunk cousin in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, because I was working there. That's not a smart thing to do. And so he'd come home from work. He'd have a couple drinks. He'd go off to the bar. I'd go to the AA meeting. And I met a guy, and he was sitting in a bar one day, and he went, I got to do something about my drinking. And the guy on the stool next to him turned to him and said, you really want to do something about your drinking? He said, yeah, man, I really do. He said, go to AA. And he did. And he got sober. And because he's such a wonderful guy, he went back to the bar. And that guy's still sitting on the same stool, and he said, it works. Why don't you go? The guy said, I'm not ready. I'm not ready. So it doesn't matter who, that's one of the great things you've taught me is, it doesn't matter who the messenger is. Many times the messenger in the meeting is the guy I can't stand. You know, the guy whose program I don't like. Guy that doesn't do the four-step crite the right way, you know? Guy that's not big book. Maybe even is an agnostic or an atheist that doesn't believe in God. And yet it's the truth. That's a great blessing to learn to hear where the truth comes from. You know, I one of the things that happened in the third step, turn your will in your life, be very careful. I believe that is the crux of the whole thing. Because once I do that, see, once it was you guys were my higher power. You were telling me, you were going, and then you kept saying, well, you got to do the third step. Now, the first time I did the third step, I only did the third step so I could do the fourth step, because everybody said if you didn't do a fourth step, you got drunk. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. But that's what they said, so I believed them. And my turning my will and my life over to care of higher power was simply doing the rest of the steps, and at the end, I had a spiritual experience. I had no concept of a God. Today, I could talk about God for a long time, because it's probably the most important thing in my life, more important than my sobriety. I can't separate the two. I believe that relationship with that God is going to go on forever, and when I die, I don't believe I'm going to be an alcoholic anymore. I believe it's a disease, and I'll be healed. But I believe that you gave me something that will go on forever. And I wasn't even looking for it. And if you're not looking for it, that's okay too, because lots of people here aren't. But for me, you know, it says in the doctor's opinion that what we tell the alcoholic must have weight and depth if it's going to replace the kind of relationship I had with alcohol. And what can have more weight and depth than that whatever made all of this has got his wallet out, her wallet out, its wallet out right now with your picture on it going, see this? This is my favorite kid. I love this kid more than anything in the world. I'd do anything for this kid. I've been there for this kid its whole life. I've even let this kid hurt itself because I love it so much. And now it's come home. You know, in the story of the prodigal, you guys know that story. Jewish kid goes off, hangs out with pigs, drinks up his inheritance. Like a good alcoholic, when he runs out of money, he goes home. Dad's got a few bucks. Gonna have a good time. But what they don't tell you in that story is that it's really the story about the loving father, because it says that while the prodigal was still a far way away, the father apparently is on the porch waiting for this kid to come home. And when he sees him, he runs to him. And at that time, a Jewish man would have worn long robes, and he would have had to lift up his robes to run, which meant he would have had to expose his knees, which would to have shamed himself. The father was willing to shame himself to get to his drunken son faster. That's the kind of loving God that I found here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've been mad, don't get me wrong. God and I right now are, we're having a wrestling match. He's going to win. He's going to win. But about 3 years ago, I don't know how I missed it, but I went to work for some really mean people. And that's not just me and my perception, alcoholic perception. Everybody I worked with, non-alcoholic, alcoholic, they've all been scarred by this particular place. And I didn't know this crap went on. Now, I know some of you knew this since you were this high. I didn't know you could have an idea and at the next meeting somebody took credit for it. I didn't know that happened. I didn't know that people would look you in the face and lie to you. I didn't know that people would motivate you with fear and never with an attaboy. That's just not, I didn't know it. And all of a sudden I ran into this whole world I hadn't experienced before. And all this stuff you taught me, all this stuff about being honest and showing up and being responsible and not being mad and not keeping a resentment and putting it on the four-step, that four-step. I'll tell you right now, I got some people I'm resistant putting on a four-step. And that's never been the case before. Because I believe promptly. You know? That four-step. It's simple. Isn't it? It's the greatest step on the face of the world. I see, my life out there is kind of complex. But when I got sober, now, I don't know what you got here, but we got some other stuff in the States. But the four-step, I only got four character defects. I'm selfish. Mine. All mine. I don't know what they are, but they're mine. And you can't have any. Mine. Self-seeking. All right, I'm going to give you one. But one day, I am going to ask a favor of you. See, I'm going to give you something, but I'm going to expect something back. See, I never did anything for free and for fun. I never did anything and that's the first time I've ever had that experience in Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. You'll have it. You're sitting there, and somebody takes a year chip, cake, whatever it is you give here, and all of a sudden you're as happy for them as if it was for you, and you don't even know them that well. Never had that experience before. Was never happy for somebody else getting something that didn't include me. Self-seeking. Dishonest. I wasn't there. I know you have videotape and your sister will confirm it, but it wasn't me. See, and I thought dishonest was just lying, but there's another kind of dishonesty that I found about in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's where I'm mad at you, but I never tell you. I never tell you. I never give you a chance. I never say, let's go have a cup of coffee and talk about it. You're just dead man walking. I'm leading a meeting. Your hand's up. Don't see it. Sorry, just didn't see your hand. Didn't see it. Guess God didn't want you to talk. Huh? Don't know how you didn't get invited to my party. Don't know how that didn't happen. See, the fact is, I just cut you off. So what I found out was honesty was giving you a chance to even know that I'm mad at you. Selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. Frightened of living, frightened of dying, frightened of everything. I can still be frightened today. If I don't do the steps, life scares the hell out of me. I getting older, I don't know if the new 60 is the new 30, the new 20, the new 12. I don't know what it is. I just know that I wake up and this stuff, it hurts, and that thing done, and the guy I used to be able to beat at tennis, I can't beat anymore. And I used to be able to beat a guy that was 26. Now they got to be 36, you know, and it's like, wait a minute. I didn't sign up for this. girls I look at across the meeting going, she's cute, go, remind me just of my dad. Say I got sober in 1979, and it will not make me feel better if you come up to me after the meeting and said, you got sober before I was born. That's right. The year I was born. Thanks a lot. I love if you tell alcoholics not to do something because they'll do it. They're just like children. And if you stick around, I promise you that life will break your heart. Don't mean to be a bummer here. We're laughing and having such a good time. But it will, you know. All the people, when I came in Alcoholics Anonymous, I had spiritual grandmothers and grandfathers. One was Alabama Carruthers, grateful alcoholic, spoke all over the world. She was my spiritual grandmother. She's gone. You know, all the old-timers that were old-timers when I was young are gone. And I'm kind of, you know, there'll be a day 10, 20 years from now when my seat will be empty and somebody will be in there, and about two generations later, nobody. You know, it's the way it is in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I miss them. I miss them. I miss having those people in front of me. I miss having those people who could reparent me, who taught me how to show up, who taught me what to do because I was willing to listen to them. And who taught me that it's okay to be human and have time. Please, don't ever put anybody with time on a pedestal. There is no room to dance on a pedestal. Old-timers will lose it in a second. Well, if I had 25 years, I'd never do. Yes, you would. Why not? You scratch me deep enough, there's just an alcoholic inside of me. I didn't come here to get well. If I get well, I'm out of here. I got to come and have permission with as much time as I've got to be the sickest person in the room someday. That doesn't mean you got to co-sign it or go along with it. It just means I've got to be able to come in here and not pretend, not do the thing I've done my whole life, which is act like it's okay all the time when it isn't. Yeah, you should see all my pictures as a kid. Had an alcoholic mother trying to kill herself. She finally did. I'm just smiling all the time. Because I can look at that elephant and never see it in the living room. You know, I married a woman at 16 years of sobriety. She was having an affair when we got married. That'll quiet her room. Yep. Yep, I wanted to grab her and tell her the rules are cheating. She misunderstood the rules of cheating. You don't cheat at the marriage. See, you don't do that. That's just wrong. That's wrong. It's not that it's wrong that she's cheating. It's when she's cheating that's wrong. I do believe cheating is wrong, don't get me wrong, but that's not when you cheat. You marry someone thinking they're the love of your life, they fail you miserably, then you cheat on them. If you cheat at the wedding, you've got no place to go. Now, this is what I call the bomb going off. It may happen in your life. Maybe it's over a relationship. Maybe it's over your children. Maybe it's over your job. Maybe it's over a dream that doesn't come true. A guy in L.A. said that if you stay in AA long enough, you're going to get everything you ever came to get in AA. You're going to find out you're never going to get what you came to get in AA. And then why are you going to stay sober? All right? So I don't know what the bomb was in your life. But this was a bomb because I've been married a couple of times. This was the only ceremony. We had a ceremony. We had all our friends there. It was just boom. See, one day you're standing out in your yard. It's a normal day. The sun comes up and ba-whammo, and the bomb goes off. And all of a sudden you're standing there and it's just moonscape. You're naked and your hair is on fire. And there is nothing that you recognize as anything. 16 years. We dated for 3. I didn't move her in until after we got married. First time I'd ever done that. I tried to do it. I found out that you can do it all right. It can still turn out all wrong. They thought they could wrest satisfaction and happiness from life if only they managed well. That's the big book talking about sober alcohol. But what happens when the bomb goes off is after you kind of come to, you notice there's this little bomb shelter down there. And in my mind, it's Big Book Blue. And you kind of stagger down there because it's the only thing left. And in the window, there's these old guys playing cards, drinking bad coffee, having a meeting. And you knock on the window. Now, remember, you're naked. Your hair's on fire. Most normal people would go, ah! They just kind of go, yeah, come on in. Come on. Bomb went off, didn't it, Steve? Somebody want to put Steve's hair out and give him a blanket? At 16 years of sobriety, I walked into my home group totally shattered, and all those people did was love me. Nobody said, what, 16 years, your picker broke, Steve? What step were you on, Steve? Did you ask God about this, Steve? Nobody in my home group tried me to make me responsible for her cheating. What a surprise. She did, of course, but that's another story. Oh, God, God got me out of that relationship. So, oh, God, thank you. Thank you. But at the time, it was a very difficult lesson. And I'd sit in that meeting, and sometimes I'd just start crying. And all of a sudden, a one-year-old arm would come around my shoulder. And I didn't go, no, I'm sorry. I have 16 years. You must have 17 years. Sometime it wasn't even an alcoholic arm. It was a drug addict arm. And I didn't go, I'm sorry. Can you identify as an alcoholic before? No, man. I just took the love. I took the love, and I hurt, and I healed, and I sat in that meeting, and I allowed myself just to be an alcoholic, which I think is one of the hardest things to do once you've been around here for a while. Because I've had people come up to me, and I expected more of you. How can you? I actually have a guy I was sharing about a relationship problem, and he said, you can't have relationship problems. You're my hero. I had that. Sorry that my life's interfering with your program. Talk to her. She'll just stop it. I'll be fine. I've had chances to make amends to people who are dead. My dad died my first year of sobriety. I had a chance to change him and feed him because he was paralyzed. And I ducked it. Because my father was the greatest man I ever knew, and he's a big, strong guy, and when I was in his arms, I was the safest I'd ever been, except for my mother, the alcoholic that he went to Vietnam to get away from. But besides her, he protected me from everything. And he died. And I knew I owed him an amend. And one day, there's a place in L.A., County General, and the 6,000 ward is where the alcoholics go to die, and there was a guy getting out of his bed to go to the bathroom. Now, if I come to your house, if I have to go in your restroom, the water's running. I'm very shy about certain things. But all of a sudden, I was helping this guy get off his bed, onto the bedpan, doing whatever I had to do. I was calling the nurse. I was in the hall, and then it hit me. Oh, my God, he even looks like my father. Because I guess God knew that I really needed somebody who looked like my old man to make that amend to. I promise you, whatever you are, and I know if you're a guy, you've got it. I know the guys in this room have got some stuff that are saying nobody's ever going to know, and there's no way I'm ever going to tell anybody, and there's no way I'm ever going to be able to make up for this, and I promise you, you can, because this is a spiritual program, and one equals three. I promise, whatever it is, if it needs to happen, it can and it will. And if it doesn't, something else will. I know a friend of mine, his son died of AIDS. He sponsored all these kids with AIDS, you know? And he sponsored them when they were still dying before the cocktail came along. Now they're starting to live. He sponsored them for a long time. 1 and 1 equals 3. This is the magic kingdom. I can't tell you the miracles that I've seen happen. And right now, it's a struggle. I moved from L.A. to New York 5 years ago, and I still haven't settled in. You know, I just, California was sort of me. And I moved for some very good reasons. But it's very different. And it's not them. They've been sober there a long time. In fact, I'm 5 minutes from Bill Wilson's house. I run tours there. You know? They've been there longer than, the only place longer is Akron. So it's not them, it's me. And I've got to learn to fit in. Because there is a problem. I can, I'm going to finish this up. I see some seats moving. I told them, they said, you can go as long as you want. I said, I go until the tushies start moving. Once the tushies moving, even Jesus can't save souls. look, here's the deal. God's got us in a double bind. I can either work the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous or I can work the 12 steps of alcoholism, but what I cannot do is not work a program. That's called a double bind. Now, I don't know what the 12 steps of alcoholism were that you worked before you got here, but the ones I worked went something like this. One, I declared I was in complete control of my drinking and my life was fine and dandy. Thank you very much. Two, I always knew there was no power greater than myself, but all of you needed to be restored to sanity. Three, turn my will and my life over to the care of alcohol because it was the only thing that understood me. Four, made a paranoid and immoral inventory of anybody but me. Five, admit nothing to nobody ever. Six, became entirely willing to have God punish you for all your defects of character. Seven, humbly ask him to go bug somebody else. Eight, made a list of all persons who had harmed me and became willing to take revenge upon them all. Nine, took direct revenge whenever possible, especially when to do so would injure them and others. 10, continued to take your inventory, and when you were wrong, promptly told you so. 11, sought through alcohol and medication to improve my unconscious contact with myself. Praying only for what I wanted when I wanted it and the power to get it. And 12, having achieved spiritual death as a result of these steps, I tried to carry this message to other alcoholics and take just as many of them with me as I could. Only one tradition in that program, do whatever you got to do to get through the night, right? Because you're going to do it. Doesn't matter, over, under, through. If you got a drink, you're going to drink. And you might as well do it. There's no rules when you're drinking. That's the great thing about drinking. No rules, because you're going to drink. Now, let me tell you just the kind of miracle that happens in a ninth step of this program. The reason I got to New York was I owed an amend. I owed an amend to a girlfriend, my college girlfriend from 32 years ago, not because of my drinking, but because I was a real crap head at 21 when I broke up with her. And I always felt like, you know what, if I got in touch with her, I need to make an amend. Well, she'd come over here. She was a ballet dancer. She danced in Netherlands. She's danced in the city. She danced in Frankfurt 25 years. I didn't see her. She also, when she retired, she had a child. The umbilical cord was around Jessica's neck. Jessica physically operates at 2. She's 17. She'll be 17 on Friday. A friend of mine called me up and said, there's a picture of you on the internet. I said, Why is there a picture of me on the internet and how did you find this out? He says, well, sometimes I type people's names in and this came up. It was a picture of my old college. And there her picture was, popped right out of me, went on the alumni website. She's living in a place called Mount Kisco, New York. So I email her, hey, Steve, probably don't remember me. A lot of people don't that I dated. Of course, I don't remember a lot of the ones I dated. But anyway, I do remember you. It's something I'd like to tell you. She wrote me back. I said that. Her sister had been involved with that, and she understood what I was doing. And she said, look, that was a long time ago. I got to talk to her. She talked to me. We got on the phone. And then the Starbucks started to fly. Then I was going to Minnesota to speak. I went to New York, too. Then she came to L.A. Then we had this coastal relationship. And then now Jessica's got all these doctors. I got to go to New York because she can't move Jessica to L.A. Jessica's in this wonderful school for kids just like her. So I moved to New York 5 years ago. When I moved, my girlfriend was not an alcoholic. I think I'm a carrier. She went to the program 2 years ago in July. She did the craziest thing, and she felt bad about it. She had, in 2 years, one airplane bottle of alcohol, drank it, and then went right back to her sponsor. I said, are you out of your mind? I don't know about you. If I'm going out over an airplane bottle, it's going to be a big airplane bottle. You know, it's going to be like off the Russian airline airplane bottle. I'm not taking one drink and going back. She got a year this month. Jessica's got a sober mom. Her father died of alcoholism. My mother died of alcoholism. Their children today are sober. Because of you, because of this everywhere. 1 and 1 equals 3. I couldn't have gotten to New York. I don't like New York all that much. I prefer to be someplace else, like back in California, but you know what? It's so obvious to me that God wants me in New York, I'd have to spit in his face to leave. So I'm just going to stay. And you know what? I've done this long enough to know if I stay, something's going to happen that I don't even know is going to happen. It maybe already has. I mean, if nothing else happens, just Kathy getting sober, that wonderful, talented, brilliant woman not having to drink herself to death is 1 and 1 equals 3. If you do the third step, the drunk is coming home, and he's sick, and he's hurting, or she's sick, and she's hurting, and she's hung out, and she's torn up, and she's magic moment of surrender, and they run into God. And God's got something in his hand, her hand, its hand. And the drunk goes, what's that? And God goes, well, this is sobriety. And the drunk goes, how much does it cost? See, the drunk only understands buying stuff. And God, being manipulative, goes, well, how much you got? And the drunk goes, well, I got about $50. And the guy goes, okay, for you, sobriety costs $50. And the drunk, trying to back out of the deal, goes, whoa, 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 if I give you all $50, I won't have any gas for my car. And God goes, oh, you have a car. I'm sorry, I forgot to mention that, but sobriety is going to cost you your car. He said, whoa, whoa, if I give you my car, how am I going to get to my job? A job? You have a job? I'm sorry, but I didn't mention, no, sobriety costs you your job. Well, what about my house? A house? You have a house? I mean, your list. I thought you were in the cardboard docks by the railroad tracks. No, sobriety costs you your house. Well, what about my family? Oh, a family. Family, no, sobriety, I'm sorry. Sobriety's going to cost you your family. He says, well, if I give you all that, what good's my life? And God goes, that's right. Sobriety will cost you your life. And the drunk, because she's at that magic moment of surrender, is willing to give God her money, a car, house, job, wife, kids, husband, life. And God gives the drunk sobriety. Then he looks him deep in the eye and he says, all right, I give you your money back, but it's not your money anymore. It's my money. You get to spend it for me. I give you your car back. It's not your car anymore. It's my car. You're going to drive it for me. I'm going to give you your house back. It's not your house anymore. It's my home, but you're going to live in it for me. I give you your family back. It's not your family anymore. It's my family, but you're going to take care of them for me. I'm going to give you your life back, and it's never your life ever again. It's my life, but you get to live it for me. And maybe, just maybe, I'll give you the pleasure of passing it on to somebody that's got 1 minute. Keep coming back.